This is Maeve Russell. This is tape number 367, side 2, December the 15th, 1978. And this is the third in the series on Guyana. We'll probably go on to four or five tapes, and then we'll do a rundown, update on the news, and then get back to some more on this important matter. Last week, I gave you a sheet that was enclosed with a tape of the categories, the way I saw Guyana falling into place after about 2 weeks of information coming in. I made that list. I updated it, and I'm putting that in this week's tape so that you can see, various researchers who are following this closely, how I add new files. I work with these boxes of files, 100 at a time I get, and label them. I can shuffle them, rearrange them, add numbers. The basic numbers stay the same, and if something fits in between, I just add an A, B, C, or D. I mean, there are two books out on the Guyana affair, one by Mr. Krauss in the Washington Post and the other by Marshall Kilduff and Ron Javers, the co-author of this one, The Suicide Cult, came from Harvard University, moved out to San Francisco. I get skeptical of some of these Eastern people trying to understand this California violence or phenomena, which he obviously doesn't do. The most important category of my research always is the chronology, the overlay of the years. It's very important to see what happened at what time and then compare it to other events taking place at the same time. And I think after years I learned that the chronological layer of events is terribly important, the most important thing to read and analyze. And then you also can see how much is left out from one book and how much is left out from another, these important years. I took the book, The Suicide Cult, and went through it one time and typed up into about 40 or 50 pages everything in chronological order that was included in this hasty book. It only came out 3 weeks after the murders in Guyana. What Mr. Kilduff leaves out, of course, is the education and the qualification for Jim Jones to get juveniles to be able to have them sent to him, even a person on parole who is sent or probation down to him, or disabled people or mentally sick. He doesn't ask those questions at all, why the state would send these children to him. He doesn't explain why he would build a barbed wire fence with towers around the property in Ukiah. There's no explanation in detail of what went on in his life, 1950, 51, or 52. He doesn't explain Marshall Kilduff how the mayor of Indianapolis appointed Jim Jones director of Human Rights Commission. Just because he adopted an Oriental child and a black child doesn't really explain how he becomes the director of Human Rights in 1960. In 1958, in Indiana, he met Charles Beekman. Beekman is a common denominator, he and Mark Lane, through this whole era. Lane from certainly surfaced after the Kennedy assassination and ends up with the woman who's in charge of money for hit teams in his apartment 3 weeks before all the violences came down. Along with Mark Lane is Charles Beekman, who had a 20-year friendship with Jim Jones, who's now being charged for the murder of four people down in Georgetown. The contacts of Bloomington, Indiana are totally ignored. He doesn't even mention the university and the work at Bloomington. The Brazil trip is passed over in the most half-assed way, and of course that was the primary connecting link of this whole story. The 1961 to 1963 trip of Jim Jones, when he was allegedly working with the CIA and the U.S. Embassy was bringing him his groceries and food and transportation, and he lived in a large home and took trips to Argentina and other places while stationed in Brazil. They don't explain in this book why medical and law enforcement authorities in Indiana were probing Jim Jones in 71 when he'd already left for California years earlier. He mentions that they were going into his activities in 1971, but doesn't even question what in the world they'd be looking into them then if he is in California. They mentioned that the state and federal internal revenue knew that he wasn't filing taxes after 1965, and he wasn't investigated. He also was protected by the Los Angeles Police Department, and charges were dropped when he was picked up there. He had two foundations that didn't file papers. and there were no prosecutions, but there's no connection between the IRS and the Internal Revenue and the tax deductions and the shenanigans at the present time with the same freedom that he had in 65 on up, where they didn't touch any of his papers or investigate how his money came in or what he was doing. In this book, they mention, when you get into the chronology, they took trips to Detroit, trips to Texas, Mexico, Washington, D.C. They don't bother to ask who he saw or why he went. I heard Marshall Kilduff on television. He said the title, The Suicide Cult, wasn't exactly right because it was a religious group that didn't think of themselves as any kind of cult. Once they got down there, Jones had made sure that there was no way to get out. So that isn't a cult. They weren't there of their own free will. They couldn't come and go, and people had no access to transportation or ways to get out. And he agreed that many were murdered just recently. This week in the newspaper, they said as many as 70 may have been murdered. But again, there's several hundred missing. And there are no autopsies except for seven people. So the cover story, The Suicide Cult, is just that, and has no account of those trips to Mexico or Texas or Washington. Those cities come up in this book, and if you go back even to the first outline I did 2 weeks after the death took place, I had earmarked Houston, Texas, and Mexico as areas to look into. There are many names left out of this book. Of course, they don't seek them. It's a quick book, a fast book to make a buck, and that's all it does. The one good thing that gets lost in here that I want to call attention to on page 188, there are quotations from various newspaper people on what happened down in Guyana and interpretations from the Japanese press and people around the world. But the best explanation of motive was from Munich, Germany. I don't know if I can pronounce this. The Süddeutsche Zeitung from Munich, Germany, a newspaper down there, had an opinion on the suicide, what they call the suicide cult, and this is what they said in quotes. American society is composed of joiners, of people who like to form associations, where a bunch of joiners got together after World War I and formed the National Socialist Party. That's pretty heavy coming now, and I think that's what this is, a continuation of the Nazification of the world that was started by a group of joiners after World War I, and it's on page 188 of the book, The Suicide Cult. As I say, I took every date in the book and typed it up, page number, date, and what event took place. Of course, they begin with when Jim was born in Indiana. He married Marceline Baldwin, a nurse, in 1949. In 1950, they moved to Indianapolis, and then he jumps to 1964. He was finally ordained a minister in the Christian Church branch of Disciple of Christ. Keep in mind always with your chronology that from 61 to 63, he was in Brazil, and then when he comes home from Brazil, he's ordained. So we don't know what he was doing in Brazil. He didn't have a teaching credential. He wasn't a minister. He was down in 2 years in Brazil with the American Embassy. In 1956, they said he found enough money to purchase a former synagogue in Indiana. The synagogue was in Indianapolis. In 1960, the mayor appointed Jim Jones director of the Indianapolis Human Rights Commission. Again, no explanation of why, except that he had these mixed children, the white, Asian, and black, that were adopted. In 1963, according to this chronology, the People's Temple changed its name, People's Temple Full Gospel Church. And he said money was a mysterious commodity. He had enough finances to travel and promote himself. Now, keep in mind, again, he goes down to Brazil, spends 2 years there, and then all of a sudden, he has a mysterious commodity known as cash and finances to travel. There's an interesting coincidence. There's several coincidences in this story that we'll go into, but Esquire magazine had an article naming two places that would be saved from nuclear bombs, one Ukiah, California, and the other Belo Horizonte in Brazil. Later, Mark Lane went to the Hunter family up north and told them he was a reporter from Esquire magazine, and he used an alias to get an interview from members of the People's Temple. Evidently, Esquire has I don't know if there's any connection here, but interesting point. Clay Felker now runs Esquire. He was from the CIA. And Esquire magazine has always been antagonistic to various conspiracy theories. They've never helped the researchers along in any way that I've ever noticed. But it was Esquire that had this article talking about Belo Horizonte that sent Jim Jones down there. It may be that he read the Esquire story, but it didn't explain how he took his wife and family and went running down to Brazil. In this book, The Suicide Cult, he leaves out the entire Brazil trip. He has three sentences to describe Jim Jones in Brazil. It said, Kulldorff says, he decided to take his family to Brazil for rest and scouting mission. For self-proclaimed missionary experiences, he enjoyed a brief stopover in backward British Guiana, later now known as Guyana. It was Guyana then, British Guiana, now known as Guyana. And that's all he says about Brazil and Jim Jones. And yet the Brazil trip would be the one that could unlock the medical experimentation, the future use of Guyana, the money he's going to have when he comes back to the United States, his future programming of blacks, and his Nazification and processes in the Bay Area, where he takes his large mass down and prepares them to die, and their state is in a mine where they're, those who aren't totally brainwashed have to be murdered, but they take this mass down there at 77, and they're slaughtered in 78, and it seems they knew all along they were preparing to kill all these people. In 1958, Charles Edward Beekman, who's now 42, became friends of Jim Jones in Indiana. That goes back 20 years. You have to read the book, The Control of Candy Jones, The Mind Control of Candy Jones. She was sent from New York City, where her offices for a modeling agency were across from John Tunney, and she was linked to the CIA through these particular people, the Tunney family, and through the FBI. And she was fed a line right to Oakland, California, for her telephone mind control. And her first CIA trip began in 1965. Beekman and Jim Jones met in 58, but they've been friends for 20 years. And then Candy was trained to keep nothing in writing, to have hypnosis and drugs, to have a gross and global loss of memory. And she was taught to hate and to stay away from black people and to dislike black people. And the same for Jews. And in her book, she tells about her hypnotism and the influence that the warfare state had on her. And she refers to the hard controls began to come down on her in experimentation in 1957, where she began to her first work for the CIA. And Charles Edward Beekman met Jim Jones in Indiana. This was in 1958. And this is one of the questions we have to ask about his background, what he was doing then. Just several weeks ago, he killed Krista Amos, 10 years old, and Leon Harris, 21, Martin Amos, 9, and their mother. He cut their throats. Ron Javers and Marshall Kulldorff make a big apology. They go overboard to explain why Jim Jones liked Guyana. They said in the 1960s, he liked the Victorian homes. The Guyanese people were sweet and friendly. They spoke English. The transportation wasn't too costly, et cetera, which is just, again, a lot of literary bullshit. When Jim Jones went down there, he hardly went into Georgetown. He compromised the officials. He had his women sleeping with them, photographing them. Mr. Burnham was put in by the CIA. He wanted isolated property. And after the death of over 900 people down there, the people in Georgetown that made the newspaper writers interviewed didn't even know that there was a Jonestown nearby and didn't know anything about it. Most of the people in the country didn't even know it existed. The architecture was the last thing he was looking for. Victorian architecture was the last thing Jim Jones was interested in. But again, these writers have to give you this cockamamie story to cover up what is the real story. Now, in his chronology, in 1963, Jim Jones gets a small fleet of buses and begins touring through the Midwest. This reminds me of Charlie Manson getting out of prison and going to Sacramento. And in the book, The Family, Ed Sanders says, as winter oozed on, he bought a bus and equipped it with stereo and chicks and took an 18-month trip to the Southwest. Well, this is the way Jim Jones, with no noticeable occupation, he set up a storefront and had all this money, comes home from Brazil and has all this money, and he's taking a trip. Again, on page 23 of this book, it mentions that in 1971, the Indianapolis State Board of Psychology examiners was interested in studying the faith healing and of Jim Jones, and went into the medical and law enforcement authorities suggesting maybe they should question his practices, but decided they were powerless to go into what he was claiming he was doing. And again, that's interesting that it's put for this year because Jim Jones had left there in 1971. He wasn't even there. In 1970, in Indiana, the Secretary of State revoked the corporate license. Jim Jones had a corporate license for a company called Wings of Deliverance and one called the Jim, that's Jim, Lou, L-U, Mar, I guess Marcellina Corporation, a nonprofit enterprise. They never filed annual reports for tax deductions. They were founded in 1965. They got tax foundations from 1965, but they never filed with the IRS. In 1966 to 1970, Wings of Deliverance never filed corporate tax returns. The Jim Lou Mar Corporation filed only the first year, yet the state never prosecuted the corporations. The IRS never investigated them, and another link. According to Kilduff and Jevers, this is another link in his good luck. You see, in the files that I gave you where I have Jim Jones' favors from the IRS, we put it right into that section. Where we have favors, the LAPD's arrested, we put it right in there. With the IRS today, they never touched Jim Jones' funding or financing or the accumulation of millions. They had a hands-off policy in 65 when he formed the corporations and came home from Brazil, and they have it right up to today. The Washington Post had a big article this week. Jim Jones' story, Guyana, is over. The whole story is over. And then below, it talks about the secret $10 million that are in banks in Bahamas, France, England, Switzerland, Panama. And they don't even want to know where the money came from or who deposited it or where it's going to go. But the story, for all purposes, is over. Jim leaves Indianapolis in 1965. And goes out to the West Coast. Marvin Sweeney joined his temple, W-S-I-N-N-E-Y, and Jackie Sweeney. They both joined his temple. He worked for an electronics firm, and they show up in Ukiah, California. Again, names to see if they died down in Jonestown or if they still stayed with him. Marceline became an inspector for a state nursing home. He built a 40-acre home. He had property, 40 acres, and he had a home for boys and three convalescent centers. Now, what license, what expertise did Jim Jones have to take care of boys and convalescents? The state gives them the money or gives them these bodies. Why put up a tower, guards, dogs, literally a closed-off camp? And, of course, the question is go into the records and find out who were the boys in 1967 up in Ukiah. Who were the boys? Their names, where are they now, and what was their condition? Are they alive? Are they dead? Did they go to Guyana? Who turned this piece of property, human property, over to Jim Jones and Marceline, this nursing home where he built this place on 40 acres? He called it a temple with special tax favors. He not only got these people delivered to him and had this compound, but he got into local politics. He was appointed to the grand jury. He was chosen as the foreman. He became director of Mendocino and Lake County's Legal Services Foundation. And then he won over a man named Tim Stowen, whose name you've seen in the news a lot, who was the county council up there in Mendocino, and he used him to work for him as his lawyer, as a legal counselor. Stowen, and then later Grace Stone, they were together up there and gave legal services. They later moved to San Francisco, where Joe Freitas, the district attorney, was asked by Jim Jones to put Stone as assistant district attorney in San Francisco, and he got that position coming down from Mendocino. He was placed as a counsel there. He was a county counsel in Mendocino, and Jones had followers from the parole officers, radio dispatchers, sheriff services, and moved to San Francisco, bought the building on Geary Street in 1972, and then the money, again, was pouring in from these various people, and they were having a lot of cash donations, and he was able to buy that temple headquarters, which was formerly a synagogue in San Francisco. In 1971, Deborah Layton, the young woman I talked about on the first side of this tape, went to People's Temple. According to Kilduff, she wasn't one of those rootless people, one of those anti-war people marching around Berkeley or the hippies. She wasn't one of the rootless. She had, in quotes, a strong sense of mission and discipline, a great contrast to the aimless drug-oriented ferment of Berkeley. That's page 114. The discipline and the mission reminds me of the background of her German mother and her father, with his military defense, germ warfare expertise. And they go on to say she became the financial secretary of People's Temple, the confidant of Jones, and that she would flash $65,000 in Social Security checks a month that she stashed away. But then she had a little reserve, in quotes, and then in quotes, for experimental community in Guyana. And this money was coming in that was to be put aside for an experimental community in Guyana. Interesting, because Lawrence Layton was into agricultural work and experiment for the federal government, and one of the requirements was an agricultural station as a cover for Jim Jones in Guyana. The chronology, I'm taking all this chronology from the suicide cult, then I'll take the other books and the newspaper articles, but I'm just using this one book now with these various dates. And Jim Jones went down to Los Angeles and got another church in Los Angeles, a third synagogue. He bought a synagogue in San Francisco, Indianapolis, and then Los Angeles on Alvarado. He moved down to L.A., and then he begins traveling. Now, it's interesting, page 42, he talks about Jim Jones in Los Angeles, but there's a void there from 71 to 73 where he doesn't bother to pinpoint a date at all, and yet these dates are very important. And then he says he began traveling. He was flying around the country. He had a retinue of bodyguards and aides. He talked to ministers in Detroit, Houston, Texas, and St. Louis. Of course, ministers are the group, the missionaries that ran the School for Assassins in Mexico. And whether or not there's a connection, we'll find out in the future, I hope. But he took buses down to Mexico and people to Disneyland and Washington, D.C. And the inauguration of Jimmy Carter, he took people back there, busloads. He founded a record company called the Brotherhood Records. I don't know if it's any relationship to Mike Kerb, our lieutenant governor in California now, who was in the music business for the CIA as a front. He came out here and worked with Mr. Vagary and the most far right wing of counterintelligence that I mistrust Mike Kerb, our lieutenant governor, who's in the music business. So we have to, again, ask the most unthinkable questions. Where is the Brotherhood of Records organization? What records have they made? It was supposed to be music sold by the People's Temple, a large interracial youth choir and orchestra. To read Kilduff, you'd think it was like the Mormon Tabernacle, but I've never heard anything about the music he sold, and I'd sure like to get those records. I bet they're collector's items. But in late 1973, according to this chronology, and this is the important part, besides the years 61 to 63 when he's in Brazil that are left out of the book, this is page 88. He says, another destination for People's Temple money emerged, a newfound colony in the jungles of Guyana. Now, late 73 is when the UCLA School to Study the Causes of Violent Behavior was certainly on the rocks, and it was not going to be allowed to go through. And by December 73 was the time when Earl Bryan said in California, I had that on the tape, I believe it was last week or the week before, they had to have some alternative means for studying these people and studying violence, because Dr. Marcus Foster had just been shot. Well, page 88 of this book mentions a Dan Phillips. That's the name you have to follow and look into. A Dan Phillips went with Jim Jones and a dozen top church leaders, and they went to Guyana with a large sum of money. The grand jury should call Dan Phillips, or they should find out if he's among the missing, or if he's dead, or who he is. Who were the 12 men who went down to Guyana for the original purchase? In other words, are these men from the Defense Department? Are they former veterans? Are they medical men? This is one of the clues about the first purchase of that land. According to this Kilduff book, which of course he hasn't researched or thought along these lines, find Dan Phillips, who went with Jim Jones and 12 other, in quotes, church leaders. Call those 12 men. Identify their names. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, up to 12. What were their occupations? If they were top church leaders, what were their occupations at the time they went down there? How did they earn their living? Were they any with police departments? Were they former veterans from the war in Vietnam? Were they with the Defense Department? What were their occupations? What was their medical training, their legal background, government connections? Who set this up? Were the 12 down there when the 900 died? How did they die? Are they alive? Where are they now? This is the team to look for. This is one of the big clues. Those dozen top church leaders. Now, Marshall Kildolf has written this with Ron Jabber, so he must know there were a dozen that went down there, and I'm sure they weren't just the black slaves that were picking the vegetables. They had a bank draft from Barclays of Canada to deposit money in Georgetown. Each had $5,000 cash. They had a bank draft for $600,000. It was late in 1973, as I say, when that school was halted that I talked about before. It was in late 73 when Earl Bryan said, we have to find another way. When the National Institute of Mental Health, Health Education and Welfare, the governor, Ronald Reagan, Stanford Research, UCLA, the CIA were looking for ways, along with the Boston Hospital doctors, to work on blacks and study suicides and mass fingerprinting. So the question is, who went down to Guyana and who purchased the boats down there? The requirements were that they have an open port. Who built the airstrip, who arranged the purchase of the boats, who manned the boats. The first four went down there, according to this book on page 92. The first four went down there December the 9th, 1973, all members of the inner circle. December the 16th, another 12 went down there. Now, the criteria that Jim Jones had, he had two main criteria. A, it had to be isolated. Remember, he said later, once I get them down there, there's no way for them to leave. A, it had to be isolated, and B, they had to grow their own food to be an agricultural mission. Again, Auschwitz, Treblinka, Dachau were isolated. What were the conditions of having their own food then? There would be no excuse for going in and out or people purchasing or leaving messages off. They could eat their vegetables, supposedly, I guess, and put people to work from 6 in the morning till 10 at night and give them a good long day to conk out and go to bed and no questions asked. The conditions, four other conditions Jim Jones said they wanted was it had to be accessible to water. They have an open boat with river, right on the river. The land had to have the potential for agriculture for them to work on. It had to be largely uninhabited with few villages around. And they were protected by the jungle and uninhabited. There was no one close by. And four, it had to be close to Venezuela. If the settlers had to escape, they could flee. This is page 93 of the book, The Suicide Cult. Even in bad books, bad articles, you pick up information. As I say, you skim away the bullshit and you come out with a little bit of the story of the conditions of what went on. So this is very important. Name, they should name all the bodies that returned from Guyana, all 910. They haven't given out a list of that yet, even though they have passports and they have the fingerprints and the bodies. Before they cremate, name each body there, state whether it is a black or a white body, and its age, children versus old people or middle ages, where they came from. Cities like Indiana, Texas, the inner circle, who set it up, how many of those people out of the original 1,200 or the people that set it up originally are missing. Did 4 and 12 go down with Jim Jones, those 16 that had nothing to do with this? They just set it up like you set up a missionary for 20 people in Mexico that could send assassins all over the world for 20 years. 16 people could do this here. They had that land from 72 to 77 until this large brown group of black people were brought down there. What, 73 to 77, what was going on for those 4 years? He was setting it up from 71. And how many took a boat to Venezuela? Now, these are impossible to ask, these questions, but those are the questions that give you the answers to what went on in Georgetown. The Suicide Cult book describes the use of the media. Again, what UCLA school was planning while they did their experimentations and electrodes and brain surgery, they were supposed to have access to the media with interviews praising and lauding their research. The People's Temple in San Francisco had a newspaper. They circulated actually about 60,000 papers a day. The money was put up by Dr. Carlton Goodlin, a black doctor in San Francisco, who I had called about 6 years ago. He's having a conference on black problems in San Francisco, and I had called and wanted to participate in the conference, and I accused him of being a cover-up bastard. That was 6 or 7 years ago. I was contacting Carlton Goodlin and sounding him out, and it turns out he was the doctor of Jim Jones all this time with his complex medical problems. The newspaper had pictures of German concentration camps, Ku Klux Klan rallies and so forth, and they had radio time on KFAX Saturday. So the media in San Francisco was projecting this great organization with the Democrats up there and the news media and praising Jim Jones and lauding his work while something sinister was being planned down on the northern coast there of South America. This tape is about out now, so next week we'll continue with part 4 on Jim Jones and the slaughter down in Guyana.